It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. Now, the Ape and the Sushi Master may sound like the name of the latest Japanimation superhero Saturday morning cartoon adventure, or perhaps an animal rendition of Zen philosophy. But it's the title of a new book, which explores how animals develop their own distinct cultures and even political hierarchies, not all that different from the way we humans create ours. Franz de Waal, a professor of primate behavior at Emory University, is the author of the book, and he joins me now. Dr. de Waal, welcome to Living on Earth.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Now, you write in your book that animals such as apes develop their own traditions and cultures in much the same way as an apprentice learns from the sushi master. How's that?
The apprentice hangs around the master, cleans the dishes, bows to the clients, does all sorts of tedious work, but is not allowed to touch the sushi and only can watch what the sushi master is doing for a couple of years. And after a three-year period, they're supposed to make the sushi based on their observations and to do it correctly. And so it's a transmission of knowledge by observation, and that's what the whole book is really about. The whole book is about culture in animals and culture in humans and how that's based on seeing others do something and copying their behavior. And so, for example, in chimpanzees, we don't only have sort of single traditions, but we also have entire sets of traditions. And as soon as you get an entire set of 39 different patterns that varies across chimpanzee groups, we can start to talk about cultures.
There must have been some point in your life or in your work with animals that your own perception of what is culture changed. Can you tell me what brought about this change in your thinking?
Well, I think the first time I heard people talk about animal culture was in the 60s, and it was at that time was a very obscure concept. I think in the West we had a sort of hang-up about culture in the sense that culture was introduced to us as something that set us apart from animals, whereas the Eastern primatologists introduced it to us as something that connects us to animals, actually. And so I think for me there was a major change in my thinking about it in the sense that once you get the idea that animals can have culture and that you should be looking for the transmission of knowledge and habits, you're going to see it everywhere. Well, I define culture as a set of characteristics of a group of animals of a particular species that is different from the characteristics of other groups, and they have come about not because you are genetically different, but because you have different learning histories. And so animals copy behavior from each other or learn it otherwise, and so there's a social transmission of behavior which makes that sometimes you find one group of chimpanzees, so to speak, who cracks nuts with stones, and another group of chimpanzees that has nuts and has stones in the forest, but is not doing anything with them. And so they have not developed a nut-cracking culture, for example.
Some animals might even be too good at what they do. How's that?
This relates to the issue of the old tea parties that they use with chimpanzees and other apes in the zoo. They would teach them to sit around a table and to drink tea and to use cutlery and stuff like that. And this impressed people very much. On the other hand, they were also supposed to fail. We were not very happy if they did it perfectly. And there's some good documentation that if you had a group of chimps who was too good at drinking from teacups, they would teach them very soon to drop the cup or to spill the tea, or because we did not allow them to be the perfect imitators of us. They had to be the imperfect ones. Because these tea parties were partly designed to confirm to us, the human observer, that they could not do really the cultural things that we do. And the most amusing case was Congo, the painting ape in the 1950s, who was a chimpanzee who belonged to Desmond Morris. And Desmond Morris sent some of the paintings of Congo to a Parisian gallery who specialized in abstract art under a different name, not saying that it came from a chimpanzee, and it got rave reviews. It was actually, if you look at these paintings, they're actually quite beautiful, and there's a lot of good composition and color composition in the paintings of Congo. And it's only after it came out that it was a chimpanzee that the critics all had reasons why they had believed, and so they sort of justified their mistaken belief that this was a grandmaster of painting instead of a chimpanzee.
Okay, now let's turn to politics. You say in your book that politics come into play in the animal world. How's that?
I have worked on politics in chimpanzees, and these studies I started in the 70s where I worked on alliances and coalitions. And a coalition is basically that two individuals defeat a third party. And so, for example, let's say you are the highest ranking male in my group of chimpanzees, and I cannot defeat you on my own, but I can make a contract, so to speak, not a written contract, but I can have a buddy and the two of us can defeat you. And when that happens, then afterwards I need to give my buddy a lot of benefits. Let's say I become the new alpha male, the highest ranking male. I can only do that if my buddy is also happy with that position that he has. And so I have to give certain sexual privileges that I have obtained or other privileges to that partner. So it's a very complex sort of transactional deal-making that's going on among chimpanzees. And when I wrote Chimpanzee Politics, which is quite a while ago, 10 years later, Newt Gingrich recommended it to the Congress. And so I, at least here we had a politician who saw the connections between their own behavior and chimpanzee behavior. And I've heard from many people that in corporations and in politics, you see many of these same patterns of coalition formation, divide and rule strategies, grooming up the hierarchy, grooming the ones who you hope to get benefits from, and so on. You see that sort of same mechanism that I saw in the chimpanzees.
I'm wondering if you perceive a danger in not recognizing animal culture, and if you do, how this would affect us.
I think there would be a great risk to that in the sense that there is a tendency for people to look at animals as a sort of little machines. And I think the culture issue, it opens up a very new way of looking at animals that brings animals in a way much closer to us, but also confuses the picture in the sense that you cannot anymore say like chimpanzees act like such and such, because now you have to say the chimpanzees in Thai forest act like such and such, but the chimpanzees in Gombe act like such and such. And so if you show, for example, to field workers videos of chimpanzees, they can see from the video where this video was taken. In the same way that you can show me videos of, let's say, Europeans at work, and I can tell you whether this was taken in France or in Germany on the basis of the way they dress, the way they talk, the way they act in many ways. And so that same sort of variability that we see among human cultures, we can see in animal cultures.
Then what do you think might humans not share with animals? What could separate us from the rest of the animal kingdom?
You could mention our symbolic languages, which I think is a unique characteristic of us. But even if you take language, you can probably break it down into a number of different characteristics, some of which are not beyond other animals. And so, for example, language involves syntax and use of symbols and classification of objects and concepts involved in that. And some of these elements, not all of them, can be found in other animals. But, you know, as soon as you start looking closer at everything that you think sets us apart, there's big holes in there. And so we are basically animals, and we are cultural creatures by our very nature. We have evolved to be cultural creatures. And all we do with culture is adding some layer of variation to our behavior, which is a very interesting layer, but is only one of the many that we have.
Frans de Waal is professor of primate behavior at Emory University and author of the book The Ape and the Sushi Master. Professor de Waal, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.